Welcome to the Future Is podcast, where we meet the people shaping what's next in business and life. I'm your host, Laura Kelleher, Honeywell's Chief Marketing Officer. And today I'm joined by Sheila Jordan, our Senior Vice President and Chief Digital Technology Officer, to talk about all things generative AI and what it's like to be a leader in this transformative time. Well, let's get started. Let's jump in and talk about generative AI. Give us your big thoughts on that. And how does it compare to other disruptors out there today?
Yeah, so I'm really quite excited about generative AI. Now, we know that AI has been around for the last 5 to 10 years, but generative AI is different and special and unique, which I'll talk about in a second. But as I step back and think about, usually there's a disruptor or a technology that disrupts how we live, work, and play every 5 to 10 years. You think about what the internet did years ago, you think about what mobile phones have done, and there's this technology that comes into our lives that really does change how we work, live, and play. And I actually believe that generative AI is that technology. You know, and the more I understand it, the more we're using it within Honeywell, the more that we're deploying it, I really am getting quite excited about the value this is going to deliver to our employees, customers, and partners.
Let's talk a little bit more about that. You mentioned value, right? Innovation is a key driver and priority for us. How does generative AI help us achieve those goals?
Yeah, so one of the things I think it's really important to do is to organize the chaos a bit. You know, we all hear about generative AI. There isn't a day that goes by that it's not somewhere, even on the radio and TVs. And so what we did was we've organized our thinking around generative AI into 5 chapters. The first is, and we are partnering quite extensively with Microsoft, and there'll be others over time. But the first chapter is what we're seeing and using in Microsoft 365 Copilot. So there is, like, think about content aggregation. Think about how you can go through all the Microsoft properties, whether it's SharePoint or PowerPoint or email, and garner content aggregation around what you're seeing, what you're hearing. Like for me, I could go into my email and say, what do I know about sustainability? And it spans across all the Microsoft properties to tell me what I know in my world about sustainability. The second chapter is where we've actually deployed is GitHub. So think about coding for engineers, and actually generative AI can help us do coding, and the engineers will be there to review it, to validate it, to ensure it's accurate. And we actually have it deployed now across 3,500 software developers inside the organization. So think about throughput, think about how fast and time to market and acceleration of our products and services for our customers and partners. And then the third is how we're using large language models. And again, here what we've done is we've taken one example is with our contact agents to really think about, we have these tech docs that we publish around Q&A for our customers and partners on technical documentation. Generative AI is now helping us write those. And surprisingly, the level of accuracy that we got in a very short amount of time is super important. And again, that's going to be available to our contact center agents who then transcribe that information and have that information available for our customers and partners when they call us with technical questions. The fourth chapter is how we're actually using and buying other technology that has generative AI built into it. One of the examples that I know we have inside of Honeywell is something called a smart virtual assistant, which is a RED. And RED is built upon this technology called MoveWorks, and MoveWorks has generative AI built into it. I suspect that as we work with our other large vendors, whether it's Salesforce or Adobe or other technologists, that generative AI is going to be incorporated into the software that we purchase. And then finally, perhaps the most exciting, is how we're deploying generative AI into our products and services. And so when you start to build that into Honeywell's products and services, we can really capture into the work that we've done on building that infrastructure. And now we're going to have generative AI on top of it. So our customers will be buying products and solutions from us that is generative AI based.
A lot of really clear examples of how generative AI is going to help us drive innovation and, you know, true value for our customers and our employees. So when you talk about that and we think about, you know, the workforce, how will generative AI change where our workforce needs to develop their skills, and how will it affect their day-to-day lives?
Yeah, I actually like the way you said how it affects their skills, because there's a lot of talk about generative AI. Some will say that there's all this hype. Some will say that it's going to fundamentally replace people. And, you know, I would say that we're somewhere in the middle. My view is that when I say improve how we work, live, and play, it's going to have an ability to take away the tedious tasks, the things that that are manual, that we really don't want to do, or repetitive, that we can have the generative AI technology do that. Again, looking into my Office 365 portfolio and have it come up and summarize a whole bunch of content that I already have without me having to scan through that information. Think about how search impacted us. This is going to be another smart search that we can go look for things that we're not spending hours doing. So from an employee standpoint, if it replaces the repetitive tasks and the things that we can use the technology to do, the time that our employees will have to really make decisions, upskilling critical judgment, thinking skills, to take this information and data, and they can actually be really part of the decision-making at levels that we can push down decision-making into the organization and actually really test our critical thinking and critical judgment. So I'm actually super excited because it's going to take away the stuff we don't like to do. It's going to make us smarter. And we as leaders of the organization are responsible to make sure that we up-level and upskill and train our employees with those critical skills and thinking.
Mm-hmm. So critical thinking skills.
Yes.
Very important, yes. Right? In the future, to be able to take all of this value coming out of AI and put it into action.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yep. I love it. So we talked a little bit about leadership, right? So what other things do leadership need to focus on to make sure that this next wave of AI is implemented with equitable and ethical standards in place?
Yeah, it's a really, obviously, it's a huge, huge thing to think through. Again, we will always deploy our newest disruptive technology in a way that is ethical and, you know, security and compliance. And we're leveraging a lot of the work that we've done historically, because I think, you know, Honeywell has really become a data-driven enterprise. We have an enterprise data warehouse. We bring all together all these different data from across the organization, whether it's bookings, billings, backlog, revenue, inventory. And we're using that to really, you know, garner insights and deliver new insights into again what our customers and partners are asking for, how do we make it simple and easier to do business with Honeywell. You layer on generative AI on top of that, and it's going to give us even more insights and more actionable things that we can do. So from a leadership standpoint, what we're doing across Honeywell, we now have 24 programs that we have launched or about to launch in generative AI, some of them I talked about earlier, and really we want to wrap our head around the things that are the big boulders. We want to do the things that are going to have a real big impact to our customers and partners and employees, not necessarily address the noise yet, all the things you could do, but really, really target those things that are big in nature and it will have a significant impact. One of the things we're really looking at now is something called a sales assist. Like the sales organization, which, you know, we have thousands of salespeople, how do we make them more effective? Not more efficient, but more effective. How do we give them the information that when we onboard a new salesperson, how we train them? How do we think about going through their opportunities and scoring opportunities to say which ones have the largest probability to close, win-loss ratio? We can look at, if you're going to go talk to company Y, how do we give you all the information, press releases, and all the information that's available about company Y? So from an overall sales assist is one of those big boulders that we can come up with that can make our entire sales organization way more effective and more, you know, customer it will increase the richness of which we talk to our customers.
So I love the points that you made around how this will really help us drive growth, right? Getting the sales team right in the right place at the right time with the customer, with the right information. And it's also affecting the customer experience. Do you want to expand any more on that?
Yeah. So again, I think generative AI, it's natural to think about it from a productivity play. That's clear. But I do think it has just as much impact around growth. So I talked to you a bit about what we're doing with the sales assist. The other area is when I talked to you about how we're training our software developers, because if we can create more products and services and software quicker and faster in time to market, that's going to indirectly affect growth and time to market of our products and services. I think about all the ways we can begin to use this on our e-commerce channels. You know, we do a lot of work with e-commerce and customers contact us not only to make the purchase and acquisition, but what's my status of my order? You know, how do I go find out those tech docs?
So Honeywell's done a lot over the last few years to advance our digital transformation. When you think about that, you know, that really got us ready to be able to implement all of this great AI technology. What advice do you give to other business leaders who are kind of at the beginning or even midway through this process?
Yeah, I guess I would give all of my peers in the out there, as well as business leaders, a single piece of advice. It really is all about the data. Applications are going to change, infrastructure will change, but ultimately you and your company, you own your customer data, you own your transactional data, you own the data. So getting that organized into an enterprise data warehouse, or getting that organized that you can use it, doing dashboards and reporting and becoming really data driven and savvy, it's not an easy feat. You got to start with data definitions. I mean, all the stuff that's not sexy, data definitions and making sure you're aligned and making sure you have governance around data masters. And I mean, there's a lot of work that has to happen that doesn't really hit the light of day, but it's super important that you get that data taxonomy right, governance, controls, data definitions. Because when you get that right, the company can then scale, can really see it. And data quality will always be an issue and it will never be perfect, where somebody fat fingers something or somebody enters in the wrong information. And the more and more and more we can address data quality, the more you have the right data to make the right decisions, which are going to expedite, you know, the better customer and partner experience. So to me, it's all about the data. And then, of course, generative AI sits on top of that and it's going to make it smarter and richer.
So what advice do you give then to companies who are not as far along on the data journey as Honeywell? I mean, do we have to wait until we've got all the data in the right place, or are there things that can be done kind of
simultaneously? So first of all, I would just say, like, you can't take it all on all at once. And I would also say that, you know, it's an important effort, that it's not just an IT thing. This is a business and IT effort together to really decide that you're going to really understand and define the data and use that. But I'd also say, pick your poison, pick your priorities. Like, you can't accomplish it all. And so pick the elements of the data that really are important that you get scaled and streamlined and simplified. And then you just, you know, develop your roadmap so that it's, you know, one set of high impact data issues, and then it continues on down the path. But it's really important that you prioritize the work and get focused and then win the momentum. And then you get the next area of focus, because that really creates the flywheel effect.
So one of the things that I think sometimes gets overlooked in these big projects is change management and the impact it really has on the success of a project or a big initiative. Can you give us your thoughts on that?
Yes, I totally agree. You as an IT professional, I can deliver the best technology in the world, but if it's never used and adopted, it's kind of a waste of the company's money and effort. So it really is important. And what I've learned, I've been leading change my entire career. And what I've learned is you really got to bring people along. You've got to explain the compelling reason why they should care. You got to explain what's in it for them, you know, why they should jump on the bandwagon. And hopefully it's not like you're convincing them. Hopefully the technology and the output and what you're introducing is of value. And again, I'm going to go back to the days when we decided that we didn't have mobile phones in the office. We didn't have them. And it was this big debate about whether we should let mobile phones come in. And a lot of IT professionals were saying, look, I don't want to merge personal and professional data. I don't want, as much as I love my employees, I don't want all their family pictures on my network and my server in the office. And this big debate. And then we had these individuals that would say, well, what about the speakerphone? We need the speakerphone in the conference rooms. I mean, it was so, in some ways, it's kind of silly and we laugh about it. But that's the reality of what happens when you introduce a massive change. You have to think through all these different use cases and variables, and you have to bring people along. So I've always said that when you're instituting change, you always have, you know, 60% in the middle that will move, but you have 20% that are the influencers in a good way and 20% are naysayers and will give you all the reasons why it won't work. When you create a transformational program, you got to get everybody. In fact, bring in those 20% naysayers, because they're always going to have a what if or a concern that you should think about as you're deploying this. So it's easy to get the ambassadors, but bring in some of the naysayers, because you're going to get those, that resistance identified up front, and then you can work through it. And then as you convince the naysayers that this really is a good thing, then all of a sudden they become ambassadors. So it is a really important point that you don't forget that. With this new technology, it's going to be about adoption, because it works, because it adds value. Like, think of your mobile phone. My 84-year-old mother uses her phone, her mobile phone, and asks me once in a while about adding a new app. Like, it's just so simple and so easy and so natural that as we've all progressed, that the technology becomes that way, that it's less really about a sophisticated change management. It's more about building in change management and the change management thinking into the organization.
So Sheila, we talked a lot about, actually I would say the future, but really today, right? And how we apply today to the future. But in our podcast, we always like to go back in time just a little bit to ask a more fun question. When you were a kid, what was it that you wanted to do when you grew up?
Well, I have two answers to that question. One is, my family would have told you I should have been a librarian. They were convinced I was going to be a librarian. On Sunday after church, I could go check out 10 books. It was the max you could check out of the library in a small town in Boston. And so I check out 10 books and then the following Sunday return and get 10 new books. So they were convinced. I was an avid reader. They were convinced I was going to be a librarian. But then I would say throughout the course of me going to, you know, high school and undergraduate, I was convinced I wanted to be an accountant. And then I took a tax class and decided I don't want to be an accountant. So, and accounting and math and numbers is something that comes kind of natural, but I'm super happy to be leading technology because that's way more exciting.
Way more exciting and extremely impactful. Yes, thank you so much for joining us
today. Absolutely. Thank you for having me. Yeah. Great.
For more stories on the people and innovations shaping what's next in business and life, subscribe to The Future Is and leave us a review where you listen to podcasts.